This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Good morning, this is Talking Devils, the leading independent Manchester United podcast. I'm your host, Wayne Barton, joined by United legend Paul Parker and United fanbase legend. I've still not worked you in some introduction, Dave. Dave Murphy took over the week events at United. If you're watching live on YouTube or Facebook, feel free to get comments and questions in. If you're watching on Twitter, comment on the tweet so I can see the comments and hopefully include them in the feed. And if you're watching on the replay, feel free to say hello and comment with your reply. If you're listening back on the audio podcast, be sure to like and subscribe. Leave a review on the platform you're listening on. Paul, how are you doing? You're right.
Yeah, I'm good, thank you, Wayne. I've just come back from a longish weekend with school friends. So
enjoyable?
It was enjoyable. It wasn't enjoyable having to drive back on a Monday morning, but the Monday mornings of old would have been an even bigger problem, but the new Monday mornings aren't as bad.
Devo, you all right?
Yeah, I'm ecstatic. I've had a great week the last few days, so yeah, ready to get going. Talk about this.
Yeah, Arsenal 1, Manchester United 2. After a tight game, Alejandro Garnacho's late winner. He gets the breakaway. A few VAR decisions going in our favour, and we're here talking about a great win this morning. Obviously, Arsenal 3, Manchester United 1. A few VAR decisions go against us. All in all, one of those really disappointing afternoons. Some post-match stuff to get into as well. Early on, one of their players, Havertz, goes in really high. Doesn't even get a booking.
I'm sorry. Are you guys getting feedback? I can hear something like a TV or something in the background, radio or.
Yeah, Paul's there. You go. Paul sorted it.
Oh, okay. It's me. Sorry.
No, sorry. Right. I thought it was my daughter. I'm like, just get the TV on.
What? All right, let's talk about Arsenal. Arsenal 3, United 1. The interference wasn't me saying that Arsenal were defeated by United. I'm sorry about that. That was a bad lead-in. I can try and edit that out. Arsenal 3, United 1. A few VAR decisions go against us. All in all, a really disappointing afternoon. Post-match stuff to get into. Early on, Havertz perhaps could have been sent off. Lindelof a little bit later on gets carded for the same incident. Saka studs Fernandez's ankle. If it's the other way around, Casemiro's doing that, it's probably a straight red. Those are the ones no one's really talking about. Then you've got the penalty appeal, which first gets awarded to Havertz. I think in that case, it's an example of VAR getting it right. I don't think it's a dive. I don't think it's a pen. Then there's the pen on Højlund towards the end. Garnacho's goal ruled outside. Looks like his arm's offside, but the part of the body he can score from, which is supposed to be the rule, isn't offside. They then get a winner. Evans has pulled back and Rice has got space to finish. Asus makes it 3 with everyone of United being thrown forward. Then there's the actual events of the game. You know, United want to go up through Rashford. Fantastic pass from Eriksen. Great finish. Odegaard level straight away. second half, I thought United were probably edging it. They looked like they were more likely to win. Game plan seemed to be working. Arsenal weren't threatening to push. Then we get all these injuries. End up with Harry Maguire and Johnny Evans, who 3 years ago were Leicester City's first choice defence. 5 years ago, I should say. But the fifth and sixth choice centre-backs for United at the moment. Third choice left-back on the pitch as well. You are probably going to give a goal away if you're playing 20 minutes against the best league, best second team in the league from last season. It's a case of whether or not you can get your own goal in that time as well. Football can be cruel. It was to us. We ended up losing 3-1 in a game that I'm not saying that we really deserve to win, because I think we set up quite poorly in the first half. But on the balance of the events of the game, United probably deserve to get something from it. But football is a cruel game. It's clinical at this level, Paul. What did you make of what happened yesterday?
I don't know. There's a lot of people, you know, just seeing my boy bought the, he said United deserved a draw. And I think in a certain way, they did deserve a draw just by the way they went about it after the previous games and the performances. My concern was always that Arsenal had more form about them than Manchester United. But they dug in and they stuck in there. But like you say, you talk about the injuries and then you look at Arsenal and there's a lot of pressure on Arsenal this season, a lot of pressure on Arteta. After what they've done last season and the way the Arsenal fans are, they expect they're going to win the league. I think they're talking about it now after that result. If that goes in at 1-1, everything's about Manchester United and how they've kind of stopped Arsenal, and everyone would be questioning Arsenal. But all of a sudden, I'm listening on the radio and I'm listening to Piers Morgan, and he was talking about Declan Rice. And I was just there, and I was with a bunch of Essex people, predominantly all West Ham fans, and everyone's going, "We didn't see Declan Rice till he scored." And the way it was after, and it's just amazing still how teams can get massive pats on the back for beating Manchester United. And even now, when things aren't good on and off the pitch, it's a big one for Arsenal. Now the story's going into it now on the radio is, can Arsenal now compete with City? And if you judge them by their performance, you've got to really, if you're a proper wholehearted fan, you go, well, no, not really. We're still not right, but it's the way it works. But for United, I looked at defensively, still didn't look right. I mean, maybe because Dalot at left back, too unbalanced. It just didn't look balanced at all. Especially with the ball. Defensively, done better than I expected. But you just look when they had the ball and still, and you know, you look at Martial and you don't even bother talking about it, to be perfectly honest. It's not worth it. We've said it too many times, Wayne. But he's having to go that way. When you look at United's squad, it'd be better if United joined the six-a-side league, I think, to be honest, and work with 11, 12 players. Because if you go to, you look what Arsenal are bringing off the bench, and then you look what United, there isn't a game changer. There wasn't anything there where you suddenly just thought, this is going to add something. And they made, I think, was it a double substitution when they bring on the fullback, the Japanese fullback? And I can't think who else come on with him. Vieira, who's a good player, Vieira. A really, really good player. Just doesn't get enough game time. And you look at what Manchester United can bring off the bench, and you kind of go, and you hope that something's going to happen rather than believe it's going to happen. And that's the bit they're missing because, as you know, both of you know, the United strength was that they had game changers. The great sides had game changers that come off the bench. You're winning 4-5-0 and you bring someone off the bench and all of a sudden you make it 5-6. That was the difference. When you look at it now, there isn't an Ole Gunnar sitting there on the bench. There isn't those kind of players there who are going to go and maybe get something out of nothing for you. You know, when United tried to get back in it, you sort of get back into the game after going behind, you didn't really believe it was going to happen because there was nothing before that suggested they were going to go and score themselves to go and win the game. Obviously, Garnacho one's a bit different. And I'm dubious about that because when I saw the first picture, I turned around and said, oh, he's onside. And then all of a sudden, when they started mucking about a bit, the angle changed. And the angle went in the favour of the Arsenal defence. You know, and I just thought, how's that happened? When I saw it the first one, I went, that's onside. when I saw the second one, I kind of thought, hold on a minute. Then everything went down that narrative that he's offside, and I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's a weird one. Devo, like, so we're getting a comment here. Satnam says, I think there's a lot to be positive about goals change the narrative. This game could have easily been 2-1 to United. The reporting would be completely different. I mean, we'll talk about the rest in their own special section in a minute, VAR and all those decisions. But what about the game itself? Do you think United did enough to get something from it?
I mean, I think the first 15, 20 minutes concerned me a bit. You know, I don't think we even had a shot on goal. Arsenal had 4 or 5 shots at that stage. And I thought, here we go again. And this is going to be a long, 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 long day. But then we started to get a grip on the game. And obviously, you know, we went 1-0 up. And I thought we controlled the game from then. I really did. You know, conceding right after, even though we conceded so quickly, I still felt we controlled a lot of that game, and I thought there was a lot of positives from the game. Obviously, we'll talk about the refereeing later on, so I'm not going to go into too much about that. But I was a little bit surprised that he started with Eriksen, I'll be honest. If McTominay was fit, I would have started him. I just don't think Eriksen has the legs anymore, and especially at a game like, you know, at Highbury, where they're well up for it. But I honestly thought there was, even though the scoreline doesn't reflect the actual game, I thought there was a lot of positives as well as many negatives. But I do think there was positives. But at the end of the day, you know, as Paul said, you know, when you beat Manchester United, all of a sudden now you're world beaters and you're game changers, you know, and that's the way it's always been for Manchester United. But recently, I just feel that the media just, you know, this is what they live for. And it's being blown out of all proportion today. The scoreline, if you didn't watch the game and you've seen the scoreline, you'd be going, you know, United got their ass handed to them. That wasn't the case for me. It really wasn't. There were so many bad decisions made there. And like I said, I know we're going to talk about the referees in a minute, but I can't leave this section without saying them. I don't really, offside decisions and penalties and stuff like that, I don't really get too bothered by it, because I always believe that over the course of the season, they even themselves out. But I've got to tell you, yesterday it was different. There was so many mistakes made yesterday. I don't believe this is a thing that, you know, referees have against Manchester United. I just don't think, like certain players and certain teams, they're just not up to the standard. And I don't think referees these days, a lot of them are not up to the standard. And social media drives that. They're terrified. They're terrified to make the wrong decision. And 9 times out of 10, they make the wrong decision. It's quite baffling. It really is. But I think a lot of positives came out of yesterday. I really do. As well as a lot of negatives. And I do have my thoughts on a certain Manchester United starter that I believe is, as well as, you know, Martial. I mean, Paul said about Martial, there's no point even going into it. That guy's body language, everything about him just says he doesn't want to be there. And the way I look at that is that, you know, at the end of the day, it is a job. That's what it is. It's a job. And if you don't like working in your job, if you don't like your workplace, that's the type of attitude you bring to work, is what Martial's bringing right now. He just doesn't want to be there. He clearly doesn't want to be there. It doesn't matter how much money he's getting paid. That's irrelevant. He's an employee. He doesn't look happy at the club. He doesn't look happy in his job. And it's shocking that he keeps getting picked every time he's fit, when he is fit. So,
yeah, I was disappointed from him yesterday. It was one of those where you're looking and thinking, what's going on there? Because I don't, you know, we'll talk about Sancho a little bit later on as well, the comments that he posted after the match. But that was like, yeah, I would have probably picked him to play in that situation, play the false nine if we happened to start with Hoyland. I did think Hoyland looked good when he came on. And then he's talking about the optimism of the games. He says, I agree, but at the same time, there remains a fragility to this squad that you get a sense of even during games. What I do think is when Amrabat comes in and Hoyland becomes a willing target, it would be much harder to beat. I do think with United at the moment, the first team is, it can compete with Arsenal when it's out there and it's fit. I don't think that's a problem. I think there's just a chasm between the first team and the players that they bring in. A comment here from Satnam, he says, Anonymous quality, Spiri, but quality, yeah, I don't think. Dan made a comment about him playing in midfield yesterday, and I've got to admit, I got the heebie-jeebies put on a few times when he came that far forward, although he did the job well. I don't really blame him for Rice's goal. Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the VAR decisions. The thing that really got to me was earlier in the week, Mike Dean, I don't think anyone's surprised by this, admitted that he made an incorrect decision based on helping his mate out. And that was always going to be my bugbear with VAR, is that they hide behind the technology, and where it's ambiguous and they need that second opinion, the refs are actually influenced in the pattern of the game. And at that point, don't have the technology at all. There's no need for it if you're just going to admit that you're influencing the game based on something completely different than the events in front of you. Now, I'm left wondering how much of that influence is down to if a game actually televised live, and if one of the commentators doesn't make a fuss over a decision. Nobody made a fuss about the foul on Evans in the Rice goal, so that goal stands. It's ridiculous. And obviously, no one talks about Hoyland. There was no replay on that, apart from, I think, Neville had said, oh, they did. Or the Drury said something like, oh, there's been a check, and it's over. He didn't get a single replay of that. And that when you've seen that on the replay, that's as obvious a penalty as you can get. The Saka one for me, a red card. There are a few challenges like that, and sometimes, you know, those decisions can't go a certain way. But certainly those marginal ones, like other ones that we didn't get to see enough of, definitely influenced the game towards the end. Dave, I know you're wanting to... I'll let you come in on this one first. What do you make of the decisions?
I mean, I'm normally one of those people who just sit back and go, you know, over the season, we'll get some bad decisions given to us, and it'll even itself out. But, I mean, this is only, for me, I think it's only going to get worse. It seems to be getting decisions that are being made are getting worse and worse and worse as each weekend goes on. Referees get suspended, they get demoted. Basically, the referees group or whatever you want to call them have made it an impossible job for a referee these days. You know, social media and Sky and everyone else that's watching the game has made it so hard on referees that, you know, they're trying to hide behind VAR, but VAR doesn't make the right decision. Then he sends them to the monitor, and then it's, you know, it's a half-witted decision as well. The decisions that were being made this year are absolutely mind-blowing. And I don't want to play the poor us game, but if Casemiro does that Saka challenge, he's off, okay? And already they're going to dedicate days and days of how much time he should serve in prison for it. That's a definite, okay? The Hoyland penalty was just so blatantly obvious. It was mind-blowing that it wasn't even reviewed. I mean, it was supposed to be reviewed by VAR, but it was an instant review, no penalty. I don't get it. You know, the penalty on Havertz, I mean, why wasn't he booked then for a simulation, you know? And then, you know, the Rice goal, and, you know, as Paul said, you would have been hard-pressed to say Declan Rice even played that game up until the 80-odd minute, because he was non-existent. And now they're talking in the paper today, as I go, you know, this is why they paid so much for him. The guy was non-existent. He really was. And the fact that Johnny Evans was being held back, that he couldn't come out and, you know, even try and attempt to block the ball, wasn't even discussed. To make that many mistakes in such a high-profile game, I never thought of this, but I think you're onto something there by saying, does it come down to games that are being shown live versus not live? Are they under more pressure? Referees are under so much pressure now to get it right that they're constantly getting it wrong. And I think it's a little bit unfair to them. And I'm not, you know, when I played football, I wasn't very fair to referees, so it's not as if I'm that pal. But I think right now, the biggest issue is that there's so much pressure on these referees now to get the right decision that most of the time they're getting it wrong. I think we should do away with VAR in a lot of cases. I really do. But just go back to the old-fashioned way of it's a fast-paced game. Decisions are made on the fly. You win some, you lose some. Unfortunately, what we're seeing here is that they're just destroying the game. I mean, even here we are two seasons later, but I think it's two seasons now, three seasons, where when you score a goal, you're still, you know, for the next 10, 15 seconds, you're wondering, well, have we scored? It just deflates the whole thing in a lot of cases. I think VAR has been a complete waste of time. And yesterday it proved it.
Yeah, Paul, critical decisions. Obviously, you've got Mike Dean, who was there giving running commentary these days as well. Do you think that United, performance aside, United have got a right to grumble about some of the decisions yesterday?
I think there's a lot to grumble about, but you say, is it worth it? It's gone now, and nothing's really improved. I'm just going to look at it again, that one, the Declan Rice one, and saw it, knowing what Johnny Evans is like. Johnny Evans made a good effort to try and get there. He didn't just suddenly felt a touch and go down and hope something's going to happen. He got held back because he'd be looking to throw his body in front there. So it was deemed a foul. And the problem we've got these commentators are obsessed with VAR. They think every time someone trips up, they always mention VAR. They can't help themselves. They've got to talk about it all the time, as if like they're being told to, oh, he's looking at that all the time. He's looking. If you're watching a game, you're watching a game at home, and you're not really interested because you're watching a game. You just, if something was to happen after, then you go, oh, okay, but you want to put VAR out your head and just watch the game as a fan, as a fan or an ex-player. You just want to watch it in that way. But it seems the enjoyment seems to be taken away from football because of the situation with VAR. And I think they're going to have to. There's a reason why they're not doing it, and maybe most because it doesn't suit them. They don't want to because they've got nothing to hide behind if it happens. I think it needs, on the pitch, they've got to be able to hear them talk on the conversation between them and VAR, and them and the assistant, and the fourth official. We've got to be able to hear that. Got to be able to hear that so we know exactly what's going on. We know what they're thinking. And that will then stop the likes of Mr. Dean helping a mate out. Yeah. When in theory, he can still be a great mate by telling the truth, but it's up to you, mate, to respect you and understand that you've got a job to do. So he's hid behind the mate. So he's not a great mate anyway, Mike Dean. He's put his mate under pressure. That's what he's gone and done. That's by doing that, he's thrown him under the bus, really. And I was at that game when that happened, when the hair was pulled, and even I caught. What happened? He pulled a hair. He's gone and pulled his hair. So that goal shouldn't have stood, the way it was. You know. Because it's his hair, but if he'd have pulled his arm, that's all right. But pulling, you know, more fool him for looking like blooming D'Artagnan. But still, I mean, but it was a foul. It's deemed a foul. He hindered the situation. So that we're going to have to get confirmation. Yeah, I'm just sorry. I've just seen that. Yeah, it was Gabriel. Gabriel was, you could see it. He's holding him and then he's fallen back and he's got his arm across him. That's what he's gone and done. So... yeah, it's a foul, without a shadow of a doubt. And as I say, the old saying is about anything, if that's outside the box, it's a foul, but there's a different kind of foul when you're in the box, you know. And it's, I just made that up, really, I think, in a certain way, because you don't really know. And, you know, we talked about the Havertz one, and I'm there and I think to myself, right, Havertz, now referee, you stopped it, it's not a penalty, book the player. Yeah. He doesn't book him. So he's still saying that you can still fall down, but if you kick someone's foot, then there's a good chance you'll get a penalty by trying to kick someone. He's let it go. He should have given him a yellow card and gone on, but he doesn't. He thinks, oh, hold on a minute, what's going on? We're trying to stop this. We're trying to stop kids emulating what they're seeing all the time, and it's leaving a bad taste. It's just not enjoyable. I get no great fun out of watching what happens with football today. It's just not... And all you want really is men playing the game. You want them to be honest. Just be honest. Be truthful to yourself and your teammates. Habits going around and all these players, you've got him there, that, you know, he'd have a fight of himself in the telephone box, wouldn't he, Arteta? Mm. It's just incredible the way he is. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
He could start a fight in a telephone box. You know, and that's before he's picked the phone up. And the way he was reacting, he's going mad at the fourth official, he was going mad at this. And all of a sudden, he's mostly gone in that dressing room after the game, and he's looked at it, and he's gone seething. He's gone and looked, he's gone, God, that my own players just mugged me off. I've made a fool of myself. I've called that person, that fourth official, everything that if I was on the street, he would have knifed me. And then, why do you do it? Why do you try and cheat? You know, but we use the word simulation because, you know, we're scared of calling someone what they really are. When in fact, given today's world, tell them as it is. You're trying to cheat, but you didn't get away with it this time. But you can have that, and then next time you think, do I want another one? Because otherwise, then I'm going to get a bit of a rep.
Yeah.
So the game has changed. It's just, and what happened to United yesterday, they did deserve a draw in a way, the way they went about it. It wasn't a vintage Manchester United v Arsenal, those kind of Arsenal-Manchester United. That as a fixture, that's died. TV's still trying to make it big, but that's gone. That's history in the day, you know, days of Sir Alex. But United deserve something out of it, considering how they've been in previous games. They should have got more out of that.
I did like Sky's build-up for it, because it was kind of like whenever they do an Arsenal versus United one, it's always they pitch it like dead close, like there wasn't an obliteration, like United didn't run away with that rivalry, like in terms of what they won in their victory over Arsenal. It's kind of like, oh, it was neck and neck all this time. Come on, lads, you know, like, have a bit of self-respect. You said about honesty and football changing, Paul, and I think this is a good point to move into where United currently are. We'll talk about two things. I want to talk about Sancho and his in this one little area, and then we'll talk about the transfer window afterwards. But the Sancho incident, and maybe Martial plays into this as well. Martial gets picked. Sancho isn't picked. Ten Hag asked after the game why Sancho didn't play. Ten Hag says, well, I picked my squad based on the performance in training, and he didn't make the squad. You watch the press conference, it's pretty much the most straightforward way you could have answered that question. Sancho immediately posts on social media, don't believe everything you read. I trained well. Yeah, look, this is on the back of a very poor Martial performance. Yes, I would have probably played Sancho in there instead. Sancho deserves to... He did all right against Forest, but I don't think he's a very strong case to say he's an obvious starter for United. You know what I'm like? I'm tempted to say, let's wait and see how it unfolds, but it doesn't appear like he's left much up for interpretation. He's out of reaction to what Ten Hag said. He's called himself a scapegoat, when I think that United have been very fair with him over the last 4 months. He's saying there are other reasons for this matter. I mean, it does stink of like someone trying to engineer an exit. If we were talking a week earlier, we'd say, all right, he get his move. But a few days after the window closes, it all seems very confusing to me, Paul. What do you make of it all?
Well, more for him, because he hasn't boxed clever, really, because now he's in that dressing room until January, if he's lucky to get out of it. But then he's got to go into that dressing room and he's got to get involved with his teammates. And as much as anything, they'll mostly go and they'll, you know, get on with it. But it's in the back of their head that they've got somebody, a bit of a loose cannon. I've seen this before when I was at United with a player. And all of a sudden, you get a little bit edgy towards them because you're worried, you don't want to get caught up with their personal problems with the manager. Because you as a player haven't got a problem with the manager. You know, I mean, first and foremost, what you do doesn't matter. You don't have to like anybody, but you respect them for what they are, and that's your boss. And he hasn't gone and done that. He hasn't respected his teammates because he's made everything about himself after they've just played a game of football. That's what's gone. And if there is more to it, then he should have been there Monday morning or this morning. And looking to go into the office and have a chat, because he wasn't happy in what he said about him, rather than go and take the easy way out and go on social media. Now, if he'd have gone and talked to a proper journalist or something, then it might have been better. But it's easy to go and do that. It's a bit of a coward's way of doing it that way. And he's looking for people to back him. What I heard when I was on the radio this morning, there's not a lot of people backing him, and I don't, you know, and if he was expecting that, it's backfired in him. Now, the manager, and he's gone in there. I mean, if that was Sir Alex and I'd gone and done something like that, I would have been asking myself questions. What the hell was I thinking to be so reactive to something like that? Why have I gone and done that? Because as much as he thinks he might have won the battle because he's gone on social media and you get people who just come in and that whole process works. One thing that's got to worry him is about how much he's liked by the person who's in charge of him, you know. And he's lost that battle already, because you don't do that to your boss. You just don't go and do that. You'd never do that to anybody like that. And he's gone far too far. And as you mentioned, did he earn the right to be playing in that game yesterday? No, he hasn't, because I have not seen him have one game where I would have said he's been this, he's been that. The only time it's been mentioned is when he's scored a goal, because it's amazing how a goal covers over the Grand Canyon of game. You know, a game, it just covers over everything. Anything negative, bang, a goal, and that's the way he's been. He has not stepped forward. And then I'm hearing, which I heard, and what happens is things now go very historic. People are talking about him, about his Man City days, the reason why Man City let him go, and then the reason why he upset Dortmund as well.
Yeah.
On two occasions with Dortmund. So he's had, I think he's had problems, and then there's been issues as well regarding him at Manchester United. And if you do want to look at something, you look at what happened to Marcus Rashford at the Wolves game, and he never said anything. He might have been seething, thinking, I'm bigger than this, I shouldn't be doing that. But he didn't say anything. But Marcus Rashford steps off the bench and goes and scores the winning goal. And that's enough said. That's done. And you let people work that, you let the people work that out for themselves. There's no point going to him looking for a story, because he's gone and done something. The manager can only respond and be positive about the way he's reacted to the fact that he's left him on the bench. And it's done. And it's, as they say, you do your talking with your feet. Rashford Sancho has just gone with it and thinks, oh, that's the way I can win that battle, because they go my way, social media, that means I win. And because I'm the player and I'm the commodity, I'm going to win. You might think you're going to win that way, but your biggest challenge is the dressing room. That's your challenge. And if you win the challenge in that dressing room, that's you safe, because you're judged by the people you play with and against. And those ones you're playing with are the ones who will judge you as a footballer and as a man. And for me, he's going to let himself down as a man in that dressing room by what he's going to.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Well, let me ask you, Dan's put a couple of comments in here that I'm going to come to you with, Paul. He says, the problem is Sancho hasn't backed down from that statement. He's even pinned it to his social media account. It shows some of the ongoing issues in the changing room. It will create divisions. Paul, you will have seen this, and I'm keen to know what happened with the other players. He has a good friend in Rashford who apparently liked and then retracted the tweet. How does this affect the authority? And when I say authority, I mean the manager, if he knows others, the player over the manager.
When I look at Ten Hag, when he walked in, he had battles, didn't he, when he came in Wayne? Everyone knows the battles that he's had to go through. He's going through like the long war at the moment with what's happening off the pitch. Because it does, in a way, affect what's going on. It affects people who are watching it. It's affecting the people who are playing it. Because the right players within that dressing room are looking around and they're kind of going, yeah, we had a good season last season, but I'm looking around now and I think to myself, we need more, because I'm seeing that team and that team. And we're bigger than them, but they've gone and got him. They've gone and got him. And what have we got? And oh, it's last minute. Again, it's last minute. I didn't think it was going to go. I thought United have got over that. But yet again, everything is still last minute. I think Amrabat's a good player. And he's one of them that could have been. You think to yourself, this was talked about the back end of the season. And you think it's only taken until now to get everything. You think to yourself, what's going on there? And then there's been the signing of Mount. And you think to yourself, could have got him. If you get Amrabat, you don't really need Mount. So you think, so what's happening now? How's that going to work? And all these kind of what's going on in there. So I'm on the dressing room side of it. I think if it goes another way, I'll be, you'll tell me how football's really changed. But For me, if you're the captain, you'd say something to him. As the captain, when I was there, to that player, said something to him, to what he had done, to how he had gone about trying to make himself relevant to everyone else by criticizing the manager and the club. And you just don't do it. While you're in there, you're one of them, regardless of anything, you know, because what will make or break you are your teammates, without shadow. And he hasn't helped himself, no different to the way Lukaku went about his business, you know. And you don't want all that to happen. Now, Ten Hag, now we've got, you know, every time things, he's gone up against adversity, he's just gone and gone bang, and he's dealt with it, because he's the first manager that Manchester United have had since 2013. The others have been coaches and been on a reputation. Things can just happen if you get them. No, what happens is you still have to buy the right people at the right time, and that's never been allowed to happen. So, you know, and I think it was said in that message come through, what happened to that player? Well, that player went. It was as simple as that. He went, and he went very quietly. Still gets talked about when certain things come up, but he went. Were the players in the dressing room happy with him, the way he was going about it? No, it wasn't that. We didn't really want to hear his problems, because we didn't have a problem. Talk about, and if you've got another problem, you know, we'll laugh and joke, but we're trying to help you. But don't talk about your problem with the boss, because we don't want to know that. We've got enough, you know, we all had enough problems worrying about what mood the boss was going to be in when we were training. So we didn't react until we saw him. When the boss smiled, we all smiled. It was just, yeah. Let me know, it was fine. But you shouldn't be doing what he's doing. And there's no way he can win this. And I think about myself. I'm sorry I'm kind of going on, but it worries me that his reputation already with this, his third club, he's got that behind him. So he's thinking to himself, oh, I need to get away from here. He's got to think to himself, what kind of club are really going to want me when I've got that history already of turning up late for places all the time, turn up late after international duty? You know, he's going back home from Dortmund, not coming back for when everyone else is coming back. So you don't respect your teammates because you think you can just be late and everything's okay. Because even now when I do anything, I arrive there early and I get annoyed with mates when I turn up on time and they're late. When we set a time, it bugs me. I hate being late. I hate people are late. And I say something in whatever way you say it, sarcastically, I'm doing it, so why can't you do it? And so, oh, well, it's just the way I am. Well, your way isn't my way. There's no point in me doing the time of getting there and for you to turn up, because it might affect something, because sometimes, 9 times out of 10, it's better to be early because you've got a little bit of control over it, you know. So Sancho, from my opinion, should not be allowed to win this one. Not at all. And he should pay the price for it. Simple as that. Because if he'd have been doing it on the pitch, people would go, yeah, but, you know, but you still have to do something, because other players are thinking, oh, what's going on here? You can't be like that. But he hasn't done it. And when you play for Manchester United or you play for any team that is competing to win the major trophies, consistency as a player is key.
Yeah.
He hasn't even done anything yet to be consistent for. The only thing consistent about him in the moment is poor form for the money that's out, the outlay that's been put on him.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Paul. I won't disagree with that at all. David, it's a very curious thing to see a player come out like this, especially, I mean, don't get me wrong, United at the moment are not wanting to catastrophize anything. They are lurching from crisis to crisis. There's a lot of stuff going on. This is something that, you know, this is the things that I don't really like. I mean, Paul was saying earlier, find a respected journalist and come out and make your piece that way. But you already had Piers Morgan tweeting him underneath, oh, if you want to do it.
No, I said respected.
No, exactly. That's what I mean. But you have like leeches like this who are ready to sort of drag the name of the club through the mud. And really, United are such an institution that the club gets dragged through the mud enough as it is. Everyone's seen that over the last month. This is why, like, when things were going bad with Ronaldo, my biggest disappointment was the fact that things were bad and he dragged the club through the mud at a difficult time. And this is what Sancho's done. I just think, like, we're trying to show unity. We're trying to move forward as a club. That's the thing that Ten Hag's actually fostered most of his reputation on that togetherness. And you've got a few bad apples who were, and I'm sorry to describe Sancho as that, but if you come out and do something like he's done, he's putting himself in that category, or he's trying to start a rot in there when there's enough of that coming from the outside. The thing is, I'm with Paul on this, you know, like obviously you want a hard line, you want a player to really sort of deal with the consequences of his actions, but United's squad situation is such, like, you know, you don't expect Martial to still be playing in 2023-24 season. He's there leading the league. And I can't see that Sancho's not going to play for us again. But it's when you see comments like yesterday, you think, how is he going to play for us again? This feels like, in a normal situation, and I don't mean like in a way everything's like do or die. In a normal situation, that's you don't come back from that. If a club is moving in the right direction, you don't come back from something like what he did yesterday.
Is that what, me? Yeah.
No, Dave, I'm asking Dave.
Well, I want to just go back to what Paul initially said, which I hadn't thought about, is that when he's come out and he's done that, I just thought to myself, well, you know, now you're done. You're absolutely done. You're going to get isolated. You'll eventually get your loan move in January, and then you'll be, you know, because the Saudi Arabian League, the transfer market is still open. So there's that opportunity in the next week and a half. But what I didn't think about was the fact that how it affects the dressing room. Like Paul said, now he becomes that person that no one really wants to talk to, because they don't want to think that the manager thinks that, you know, they're on his side just by being around him and associating themselves with him. That can happen. You know, your boss can think, oh, well, if you're being pally with him, you obviously think that statement's okay. So the players will distance themselves. You know, I thought it's just an isolated thing with Sancho, but, you know, as Paul brings up, it actually affects the whole dressing room, because nobody wants to be around him, and then that will create, you know, animosity in the dressing room. You know, the timing of it was terrible. I thought Sancho had a pretty good game when he came on last week against Forest. And this is where I'm going to err on the side of him a slight bit. You know, if he's sitting there and he's training, and we don't know what goes on in training. We don't know how Martial performs in training. We don't know how Anthony performs in training. But definitely this season, both of those players, and I'm a big Anthony fan. I think there's a fantastic player in there somewhere. If you're not getting picked and they are, it's going to grind you down. It really is, especially Martial. You know, it really is. It's going to grind you down to think that, how is this guy getting in and he does absolutely nothing? You can tell by his body language he doesn't want to be here. So why is he getting in? And then I'm having to sit on the bench all the time. So that attitude that he brings to work is going to fester, and it's going to develop into what we have today. Now, if this was a one-off, you could feel sorry for Sancho, but it's not. I mean, now the papers are saying about the problems at City, the problems at Dortmund. He's been, you know, he got fined 90 grand, you know, for turning up late all the time. Now there's another report saying, well, the reason he doesn't, you know, get in on time is he has a sleeping disorder. It's snowballing into all this bullshit, to be honest. At the end of the day, this is his third club that's had the same problem with him. So the clubs are not the problem at this point, unfortunately. It's the player. And we all know, no matter what job you're in, if you go up against your boss, there's only one winner. And Sancho is not going to be the winner here. If Manchester United receive a sizable offer for him to go to Saudi Arabia in the next week and a half, we should take it. Because I don't think he's going to play for United again. I'll be very, very surprised if there's any way back from this. You know, we had the issues with him at the end of last year where, you know, he was, you know, obviously he was having a lot of problems with his own mental health, and United sent him off to Germany for 4 to 6 weeks. I mean, I think the club have done everything they possibly can to help Jadon Sancho, but this is the third club he's done it to. You know, a leopard doesn't change his spots, I'm afraid, and it's very, very disappointing for him to come out with that. Why didn't he come out? I mean, if his performance throughout the week in training was terrible, why didn't Ten Hag take him aside then and go, hey, listen, this is not acceptable. Not just a professional footballer, but a professional footballer that plays for Manchester United. But he hasn't been ripping up trees. He's doing okay. And like I said, I thought he did well against Forest last week. I really did. And I actually thought he had an outside chance of playing. So something drastic has had to have happened in the last 5 to 7 days. for Ten Hag to not even put him in the squad. And we just don't know what that is, obviously. But it's obviously enough for Ten Hag to, and I don't think he's a very reactive manager. You know, he's come in and he's dealt with players. He's got rid of players that he believes just weren't right for Manchester United. And maybe this is just another player that's not right for Manchester United. It just feels like we're just getting constantly kicked at the moment, but be it by decisions in by the referees. The media are loving this. You got to remember, you know, Fergie and you know, Paul, you're to blame for this as well. You destroyed a lot of people's teenage years and young adult years by being so dominant at Manchester United that here we are 20 years later and they still don't like it. They still don't like when Manchester United win. They still don't like when Manchester United get the upper leg. But you know what? They can't live without Manchester United. That's the thing. They can't. It sells more papers. It takes up more time on news channels. I mean, you know, when we played against them, when we played against Wolves, that whole week was dedicated to how bad Manchester United played. It's absolutely mind-blowing. Even though we won, we're still the biggest talking point in town. But I think going back to the original question, I think Sancho, yeah, I'm very disappointed, and I don't think there's any way back from at this point.
Yeah, well, he said the Saudi transfer window is open, the English one closed. Just before we get on to that, a couple of comments on Sancho. Johnny says, morning, gents. Ten Hag perhaps shouldn't have said that publicly. I don't think there's anything wrong in what he said. I thought it was the most diplomatic way he should have said it. But yeah, Johnny says, perhaps shouldn't have said that publicly, but Sancho's out of order. He'll probably go now. Tom is very seem to try much in other teaming games. And Casey says, if Sancho was performing and has dropped, fair enough, but he hasn't been. He got 3 months off last year too, and that hasn't worked yet. I think the club have done everything can by him. I don't think that even if he's got a gripe, even if he's right to have a gripe about not playing, I think that there are ways and means about doing it, and you don't do that. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. The transfer window for England is closed at the moment. It closed last week. United made 4 deals on deadline day. And it was all a bit last minute, and Paul, you sort of alluded to it earlier. It sort of Amrabat is a smart signing, but the others maybe reactive as well. You know, like to the injuries that we've got at the moment. I don't, you know, Evans on a short-term deal, fair enough, and Reguilon. You know, I'm not a big fan of these kind of short-term deals, but we've got 2 serious injuries at left back, and you need to bring in someone who, you know, the financial situation is what it is. And he was the player brought in, fair enough, and the substitute goalkeeper, fair enough, all that sort of stuff. But it does seem like a lot packed into the last day. And the biggest thing that I'm worried about, Paul, when I look at this, is over the window. You look at where United finished last season, and you say, all right, they need to kick on now. And now I'm evaluating the squad. And yeah, all right, we've got some injuries, but the squad by itself, on a man-for-man basis, are we better than we were last year? Are we any closer to Manchester City? I look at us, do I think we're closer to Arsenal? Well, maybe the performance yesterday was better than the one that we played against Arsenal earlier in the year, but on a man-for-man basis, I would say that Arsenal are better equipped to finish second than we are to challenge them to finish second. I don't think Arsenal are better equipped to win the league. I think City are going to run away with it again. Are we closer to Arsenal? And I think that was a fair ask from the transfer window, and I don't think that that's what we've seen at the moment. And I look at where we are, and I think, are we well placed to secure the Champions League space? We've probably got a really good chance of fourth, only on the fact, or a good chance of fourth, on the fact that Chelsea are somehow imploding with another 500 million, well, more than that, spent on the squad this summer. What do you make of United's transfer? And where do you think that we've improved, or do you think that some of the problems are still there?
Oh, there's still problems there. I mean, I wish I could come out and say something different. We saw it at the back end of the season, those last few weeks. You could just see there was just falling away. It was just getting over the line. And that was camaraderie. That was the fact of the way the season had gone, you know, winning the League Cup. There was something. It was just that everyone got to know, and everyone was just through good, bad, and indifferent. They got through it because they'd played a lot of them, had been played a lot of games together, and that got them over the line. And then you're virtually asking them to go and start again, to go and do it this season, when you're seeing what other teams have gone out and buying. And as I said before, you'd look at it yourself as one of the key people and you go, wow. I always talk about the instance when 92-93 he won the league, then all of a sudden the boss following year he brings in Roy Keane, one player, and all of a sudden you go, oh. And if you're the likes of all those midfield players, the Robbos, the Paul Ince, Chockey was playing in there. Chockey played in midfield, didn't he, during that 92, 93. Mm-hmm. Reinvented himself in there. You're kind of going, oh, he could take my spot. But the right players, and that, you know, when I went there, you suddenly see the difference for the players that I played with in previous clubs. There's a big difference in those kind of high-caliber players. They kind of went, oh, that makes us better, because you want to go out and compete again. To for the manager to turn and say, well, they didn't let me down last season, they've done this and done that, so I don't want to spoil it. They're not good managers. It's the brave managers, like what Sir Alex was like. He just went, no, I want to give myself the best chance of winning it again, but I need that. I need an edge. You know, and that's what he did. He thought about it. He knew that in 92, and he knew that 92 night you needed an edge, and he did that during the season. This time he did it from the start. He came out on a trip. As soon as we knew what Roy was all about, on and off the pitch, was out in South Africa. When he turned up out there, and that's what we found what Roy was all about. So you needed something like that during this period, during that summer. Someone to come and everyone go, wow, you know, go, yeah, we've done well last season. This manager's emulating Sir Alex. He's going to go bang and bring someone in. But all of a sudden, everyone goes, hearing you in the stories, Mason Mount, and everyone's kind of gone, oh. Now, if it had been Amrabat, if it had been done earlier, people would have been on a high a little bit, because we all watched him during the World Cup. We'd all seen how he was. He's all action, everything. In all areas of the park, he was a typical midfield player. He's not a defensive midfield player. He's not a Mr. Attacking midfield player. He's actually a midfield player.
Yeah.
So, and midfield players are the fittest, and generally it used to be. The game's changed that much now because of his so-called, they call them now, these kids at the CDM or whatever they call them. They just stand in a spot. They don't run. You know, so they're not, but midfield, like the Robbos, the Paul Wentz, the Roy Keynes, even Chockey, they went from there. They wanted to win that battle there. They wanted to win that battle there.
Yeah.
And that's what he's about. And so, fine, but it's underwhelming what's happened at this moment in time. And like I said earlier, right at the top of it, I look at it and I kind of go, and I'd rather, if United were to compete in a six-a-side league, they'll stand a better side, better chance, because of the players that they've got, the quality players they can call on. If there was like 5-6 on the bench, you go, yeah, that would do. But you look at them as 11v11, and you're looking at the bench, and you're kind of going, not seeing it. It's not Manchester United. There'll be better benches than other teams with players coming off. I mean, you mentioned Chelsea. Chelsea can't compete to win a league. Chelsea have gone out and brought a youth team. And if they're trying to build, you think, well, good on you if you're trying to build. But Chelsea, over 20, 25 years, have suddenly got into it that they want to win Premier Leagues and Champions League. So those Chelsea fans, they can't go backwards now. They'd lose their fan base, you know. I mean, at one point, I remember, under Ken Bates, Chelsea had one game at home left against Middlesbrough. If they didn't win that, they were going down into the third division, Division One. 6,500 people turned up. And that was their do-or-die game, to drop out to second division. And that tells you where Chelsea have come by success. Yeah. I won't use the words before it, but I think you all know where I'm going. So now if Chelsea were to suddenly, oh, we're just going to build towards it, you think, well, that's going to take a bit of time. You can't keep charging those prices. And also, they might just lose people going through the turnstile to go and watch them play, because they have a lot of the ball, but they don't score any goals. Chelsea, as we talked about, are spending fortunes on their academy. Kids were going out on loan everywhere. If you're one of those kids now at Chelsea and you've gone out on loan, or you're sitting in that youth bit, you've gone from the fact of being seen as something positive, going, hold on a minute, they're going out and buying 20-year-old players.
Yeah.
And we're coming through.
Yeah.
So United have got, in a moment in time, I've got a way to go. Yes, we're going to, maybe we might see some progression. But the worrying thing, though, what's going to happen next summer? Is there going to be a couple of signings in January? Because there's always something in January. Yeah. You know, we saw Fernandes turn up in January, you know, and the way he's gone about it, he's been a revelation from when he's come, from what he's gone about it, what he's done as a footballer. It's been incredible. But can you go and find someone like that? Poof. It's like that, isn't it, really? The margins.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a tough season, and finishing fourth now is going to be an absolute bonus, in my opinion, because there's a lot of teams now who can cause problems, who can have days.
Yeah.
have good days. We're seeing West Ham at the moment from almost relegation to now where they are at the moment. They're going to win maybe more games than what they won last season. So that's going to be tough. So it's a more competitive league now. And I'm hoping it's competitive from the top down as well. And then that will stop that mob turning around and just trying to celebrate one team winning it, you know. So we just want it. We want it competitive right the way through, and everyone would mostly enjoy it a lot more, like we did last season when we saw the competition, what was going on at the bottom of the league, and for European places, that was definitely more interesting than who was going to win the Premier League.
Yeah, I think from the evidence of what we've seen so far, I think the competitiveness is between 2nd and 20th. I don't think there's competition at the top of the league, but United have a real problem. Standing still is moving backwards in this league at the moment. If you're in that top period, the top element of like the top like 2 to 7, United are at. Dave, I mean, like Casey puts in the comments here. Last year we had Sabitzer and Fred. Maybe not winning leagues with them, but it's yet to be seen if we replace even them. I'm sure Amrabat will help us defensively. He's not going forward, but I mean, he's the player who's coming in and bolstered the midfield, really. Mount, jury's still out, obviously. He's still got to have a selling in period, and hopefully he'll start to exert himself and growing confidence. But even regardless of that, Anana came in just to replace De Gea. So, it might improve the style of play, but is he a better goalkeeper? I don't think you're going to... Well, it'll be a big achievement for an honour if he gets... It'll be a massive achievement for an honour if his career goes down as good as De Gea's career at United. Forget the last 2 or 3 years. So we're talking about, have you upgraded? Maybe not really. And that's the thing throughout the squad. I mean, last season, you're looking at, you know, like, all right, sure, I had a good season, but you know that if you want to challenge for the league title, you really look it up. You did not play like Joe in order to do that. Or still really keeping the level of form and keeping injury free. And obviously, he hasn't kept injury free. And United are looking, scrambling around for this left back at the last part of the window. And I think that's my point, really, is do you think I've seen enough that says United have addressed some of last season's issues to say that they're going to kick on this season? Because I think expectations, and this is crazy considering we've spent around £200 million. My expectations for what I think we can do this season are probably lower than last season.
If we believe what we've read, you know, Ten Hag has chased Amrabat for the whole summer, you know, according to a lot of reporters out there. So, and I said this the other day as well on TalkSport, was I'm still a little bit baffled why we got rid of Fred and brought Amrabat in. It's like, you know, it was like for like. I'm not sure whether it's a step up. You know, I did like him in the World Cup. I think what Paul said is right, is that he's a real midfielder. He's not one of these fancy defensive midfielders or whatever you want to call them these days, or a forward attacking midfielder. For me, forwards are forwards, defenders are defenders, and midfielders are midfielders. He looks to be like a real old-fashioned midfielder, just runs around all day. And that's what I think what we need right now, because Casemiro doesn't have the legs, Eriksen doesn't have the legs, Bruno Fernandes kind of does his own thing, really. So we do need someone with his discipline in there, and I think that's what Fred gave us. It's kind of crazy, I'm sitting here saying I think we should have kept on to Fred, but you know, 4 games in, I'm kind of thinking, well, why did we get rid of him? But, you know, for the most part, I've been very impressed with Ten Hag's recruitment. I really have. I've also been impressed with the people he's moved out. Mason Mount is still an open thing for me. I like the player, but I'm still not sure where he's going to fit in. Hoyland did more in 20 minutes than Martial has done in 6 months. And I don't want to keep bashing Martial. I don't want to bash our players. But, you know, he was... You've seen that time at Casemiro, you know, grabbed him by the scruff, you know, as if to say, let's get this on. I think he gave Arsenal a lot of problems in that 20 minutes. And to come on against Arsenal at the Emirates must be daunting, you know, for any, even, you know, a seasoned professional. But a 20-year-old, I like the start that he's made. I'm excited to see Amrabat in. I mean, the other loan signings, you know, we... They're not ideal, but we don't have any left backs. Dolo can't play left back. We can clearly see that. He gets confused. He gets mixed up. He drifts too far in. It's actually a shit show, to be honest. I'm not sure why we're not using someone out of the U team that's a proper left back. I really don't get it. I really, really don't get why we're not using a proper left back there. But in general, I don't think it's been the worst transfer season we've ever had. We brought in 7 players. We've moved a few players on. We still need to move a few players on. But I'm excited for Amrabat, and I'm excited for Hoyland now that he's fit. You know, he's a big lad, but he can certainly move, and he seems to have. While he was playing yesterday, I was kind of watching his positioning. For someone that's only been at the club a couple of weeks, he's kind of clicked on where he needs to be. You know, and sometimes, you know, when you see new players coming in, they're trying to gel. They don't know where that final ball is going to be. They don't know where that final pass is going to be hit. But he had a very, very impressive, debut. And I'm looking, it's just a shame that we have an international break. You know, we're just in this period of time that I do believe that Ten Hag has a clear vision of what he wants Manchester United to look like. I just think it's going to take him a bit of time considering the restraints that we have. And I know you said we've spent 200 million, but let's be honest, Wayne, 200 million, unfortunately, is not a lot these days. And especially with a team that requires a massive upgrade all around the park, 200 million is not a lot of money. I'll give it an 8 out of 10, the transfer window, you know, so far. But I'm kind of happy with it, you know. Like I said, I'm looking forward to Hoyland and Amrabat playing as well. So,
I mean, maybe I'm being a little bit too critical. We can't account for injury crises. It's a bit of a big injury crisis for United in the areas in which they've got it. So we'll see how it happens. But yeah, you're quite right. The different sort of permutations for how, you know, United are affected in terms of the FFP and the players that they can move on and things like that. Maybe Sancho will move in the next 10 days or so. Maybe I'll say I will join him as well. You never know these kind of things. And we'll see. It remains to be seen as how these new squad options will take effect. If Amrabat comes in and does well, if Reguilón even does well, he might be better than you'd expect. Maybe Palestri will be given a chance and do well. But Antony probably had his best game of the season yesterday as well. So we'll wait and see. International break coming at a difficult time. Constantly, you never want a big break after a defeat, but that's what we've got. We'll be back next week though to talk about the Champions League group and to preview the next league game. If you've enjoyed the pod, give us a rating and review on the platforms you're absorbing us on. Really appreciate you watching and listening to the pods. And if you are watching on YouTube, put a comment in. We do comment on the reply to the comments on the replays. If you're listening back on the audio podcast as well, be sure to give a review on the platform you're listening on. We'll be back next week, guys. Thanks for listening and thanks for watching.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.